know, here he's beginning, as you see in this purport, to equate the activities of the devotee in devotional service as being non-different from those who are practicing Ashtanga Yoga, if they're practicing properly. That means that, in this sense, that the devotee is achieving the same result. They're actually practicing Yama, Niyama, Pratyahara, Pranayama. They're actually practicing these things automatically in their devotional service. And therefore they're getting the results of those activities of fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. And the result is, of course, that therefore the devotee becomes free from the modes of material nature. That's the proof. Right? One has to test that. If we say, the devotee is, doing devotional activities, they're as good as the yogi. Oh, what is the proof? Well, they're becoming free from the modes of material nature. Oh, so that's acceptable. So, even the highest mode, the material mode of goodness, is also a cause of material bondage. And what to speak of the other qualities, namely passion and ignorance. Passion and ignorance increase the material propensities of hankering for material enjoyment, and a strong sense of lust provokes the accumulation of wealth and power. One who has conquered these two base mentalities, that's tamas and passion, rajas, has raised himself to the platform of goodness, which is full of knowledge, and morality. One who has conquered these two base mentalities and has raised himself to the platform of goodness, which is full of knowledge and morality, cannot also control the senses. An interesting way Prabhupada puts it. Which is full of knowledge, cannot control the senses, namely the eyes, the tongue, the nose, the ear, and the touch. So, it's described there that one in the mode of passion and ignorance, they can't control the mind and the senses. And it's saying that one comes to the platform of goodness, they also cannot control the mind and the senses. That's the statement. So we were just reading upstairs in the Bhagavad Gita 4:22-23. Can I get a Bhagavad Gita? Is there any? It's a book marathon. Anyone got a Gita? It's the first start of the day. Is there a doctor in the house? So. We were reading this very interesting purport. Purusha prakritisto hi bhunte prakriti janagana karanam guna sangosya sarasadhyoni janmasu. The living entity, the material nature, thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets good and evil amongst various species. So by associating with the material modes of nature, including goodness, you will take birth and death repeatedly amongst the various species of life. Prabhupada mentions in this purport that as long as he is captivated by the false manifestation, the material world, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another, so as long as we're attracted to material existence. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material nature, the entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. So the interesting thing there is that, we know that many of the demigods, practically all of them, are to one degree or another devotees of the Lord. And here Prabhupada also mentions saintly persons. They're also taking birth in the cycle of birth and death, because this, although they're practicing some transcendental process, there is still, even if one comes to the mode of goodness and one is a saintly person or sometimes even a devotee of the Lord, that person may still have to take many different births. It may be elevated births, but they're not out of the cycle of birth and death, because they're still, if they still have a desire to lord it over the material nature, and of course if one is, even comes to the mode of goodness, as Prabhupada says here, they also cannot control their senses. Their position is risky. You know, the mode of passion and ignorance will sometimes disturb even those situated in the mode of goodness. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. They also cannot control the senses. Prabhupada goes on to say that, but one who has surrendered himself unto the lotus feet of Lord Hari, as above mentioned, can transcend all influences of the modes of material nature and be fixed in the service of the Lord. The bhakti process, therefore, so this is where bhakti is higher than processes that don't have bhakti. The bhakti yoga process therefore directly applies the senses in the loving service of the Lord. This prohibits the performer from engaging in material activities. This process of turning the senses from material attachment to the loving transcendental service of the Lord is called pratyahara. And the very process is called pranayama, ultimately ending in samadhi or absorption in pleasing the Supreme Lord Hari by all means. So you see here again, Prabhupada sums up his purport at the end by equating the practice of devotional service with these steps of the Stanga Yoga. They're not different. The devotee is actually performing pranayama, or, you know, controlling one's breath and senses, and pratyahara, withdrawing the senses from material activities, and then gradually performing this, dharana, jhana, and coming to samadhi, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord. But the process, when the process of loving transcendental service to the Lord is practiced, or bhakti yoga is practiced, that automatically withdraws one's proportionally that we develop our attraction to the Supreme Lord, to serving the Supreme Lord, to that degree we proportionately can withdraw our senses and mind from the material energy. That means, to the degree that we have a taste for hearing and chanting about the Lord and serving, to that degree we will not be interested in hearing and chanting and glorifying material enjoyment and meditating upon that. So, now of course, you know, in this age of Kali, we know that the scriptures recommend, you know, not to attempt to try to follow other processes, you know, such as Astanga Yoga, which is very difficult. You know, one has to practice complete celibacy. There is no, sex life allowed at all in the proper yoga system. It's not like bhakti yoga where Krishna is saying that, you know, you utilize your desire or propensity for sex life to raise Krishna conscious children, then that becomes transcendental if it's done properly. In the Sangha Yoga process, there is complete celibacy. That's not there. And one has to practice Ashtanga Yoga in complete seclusion. There's no question of, the big yoga classes in the cities. Actually, a couple of weeks, about a month ago or so, devotees here organized through someone she knew that myself and Srimurti could go and do a little bit of preaching at a yoga center in St. Kilda. And the beginning of the yoga groups around the world were doing an international day to help raise money for cancer. So it was a sort of a big event. And we were allowed to go there and to chant Hare Krishna and to speak. But when we got there, pretty much it was about 90% women. Young women in the prime of their life, and of course a handful of men. I don't know how those men, are going to fix their minds upon the Supreme Lord in the middle of St. Kilda, surrounded by, those women, but in their leotards. But so what happened was, Srimurti detected that the person in charge on that day was not going to let me speak. She was going to, because, people know that they're cheating. They know that, we're just raking in heaps of money, and, these people are just, we're not going to make any real advancement. We're not really teaching proper yoga, but, there's such good money in it, And, so they didn't want me to speak because they know, most people know the Hare Krishnas. We can be, antisocial. No, we can be quite strong, in our constructive criticism. So anyway, Srimurti went through a few different channels, and actually the lady in charge was not going to let me speak, but she'd organised that. What was reduced from about 15 minutes, that I could have 2 minutes at the beginning. So, I'd actually been listening to some lectures by Prabhupada, and I decided that I would speak on Atma, because most people who follow yoga, they may pick up a couple of Sanskrit words, Atma. So I said, has anyone heard the word Atma? And they all put their hand up, so I thought that's good. And I explained that, we know that Atma refers to three different levels of the self, as the body, as the mind, and the soul. And that by the Ashtanga Yoga process, Jnana Yoga, we can achieve some happiness on the bodily platform, on the mental platform, but the ancient scriptures describe that if you want to perform yoga for the soul, you perform bhakti yoga. And I explained that is what we practice. And I explained that they're meant to be, performed, all of them. That if you perform, we all know that if we're, our material life, our material body and mind, is being looked after, but spiritually, the soul is not satisfied, then the other things will not give us happiness, So they actually already accepted that, and they were quite happy to see that ultimately they had to come to the point of bhakti yoga to be completely satisfied. So I was very satisfied. I had that 2 minutes. So then we were able to, chant. We chanted Hare Krishna for about 15 minutes, while they setting up to do the yoga and what have you. But the point was that they don't want to hear the devotees speak because they know it's just a cheating process. And also Rajneesh, Bhagavan Rajneesh, he had a movement, and of course, you know, in their movement, you could actually make spiritual advancement through unrestricted sex life, you know, pretty much, by, you know, freeing yourself of all your material, you know, shackles, and you know, becoming completely liberated and free from all your inhibitions, and, you know, let yourself go, and this and that. So he used to preach the Bhagavad Gita that actually Krishna, because they also don't want to discuss. So if people ask, you know, the Rajneesh and what have you, or the different gurus, oh, what about Bhagavad Gita? I heard the philosophy, yet. But they're not inclined to speak the philosophy. So he used to say that actually Krishna didn't speak to Arjuna. Krishna didn't speak a word to him. He just looked at him, and Arjuna sort of understood what he was thinking. And the Bhagavad Gita is really written by Sanjaya, who spoke his opinion. So it sort of leaves it really wide open, you know, like that. Therefore, again, as they all do, they remove Krishna's words as an authority. They don't want Krishna to speak, and they don't want Krishna's words to be heard. So, you know, it's a farce. But still, here we're seeing that if it's practiced properly, as Dhritarashtra did, he actually achieved success. And Dhritarashtra, of course, had committed many, many offences, so his success was checked at a certain point. He was not allowed to progress to Vaikuntha Loka. But, you know, it's understood that after many, many hundreds of births on the liberated platform, which he achieved through practicing Ashtanga Yoga, that he gradually, as his offences, the result of his aparas to the Pandavas was reduced, that he would, you know, be allowed to elevate, you know, further. But still, he achieved success, he achieved liberation from the modes of material nature. And Srila Prabhupada was, you know, even in this purport, now Prabhupada's writing this purport, this would be, you know, before he came to the West, he's spending his time in Vrindavan. Isn't, you know, although Prabhupada does mention that yoga is, you know, if it's practiced insincerely, it's a farce, it makes no sense. But he doesn't say that here because Dhritarashtra is actually practicing it properly, and therefore he's giving credit. And Srila Prabhupada's approach was that if someone practices Ashtanga Yoga or Christianity or, you know, the Muslim religion or Buddhism, you know, the other day I heard Prabhupada was saying that, you know, if they actually practice Buddhism properly, they'll achieve all success. Ultimately, they will achieve the supreme destination, even if they practice, which is, you know, an impersonal philosophy. Because why? Because they're following God, and if they do it properly, they will actually progress, and then by that progress, they become eligible for the next step. You know. So, you know, we should be careful to discriminate that. Although it's not recommended, and that many people are making yoga and what have you a farce, there are many innocent people who take up these processes. They may take up Ashtanga Yoga. There are innocent people who take up Christianity, Buddhism, Muslim religion, or so many different faiths, and they're actually quite sincere that they want to make progress in, you know, spiritual life. Amongst them, there are sincere people. And we should have the ability to recognize that sincerity. And as Prabhupada does then to take that sincere inclination they have and just make it perfect for them. We can fast track it. You know, if someone is practicing yoga sincerely to take their mind away from material life and somehow achieve the ultimate goal, transcendence, which they're not sure what it is, A devotee can take that sincere desire and fast track it. Oh, here is the supreme goal. You're not sure what it is, but I can tell you what it is. And you're practicing this Ashtanga Yoga, but actually you can do that in a much easier way through bhakti and get the same results. It's non-different like that. So instead of just sort of, you know, making them feel like a rascal for following something which is a farce, we can actually, you know, discern some sincerity there. But generally, you know, there's a lot of people are being cheated. The other day I was listening to a room conversation where Allen Ginsberg was speaking with Srila Prabhupada. Allen Ginsberg was a very famous poet, you know, who had thousands of followers in the hippie culture in the early 60s. If he said something, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of, you know, the young generation would follow him. You know, they were sort of like, you know, very, very well respected. He travelled through, but you know, they were heavily involved with drugs, and you know, at this stage he was also still, you know, eating non-vegetarian foods. But when he travelled through India, he met a guru in Vrindavan who was a follower of Hanuman. And that guru told him that in this age of Kali, you know, you cannot practice things like the Ashtanga Yoga and these processes. It's too difficult. So in this age, Christ has actually appeared in the form of LSD. To make it very easy for people to, you know, take their minds above the mundane like this. So he was trying to convince Prabhupada of this, you know. And, you know, he was convinced. Now, up until this point of sitting with Prabhupada, of course, he was convinced that his guru had shown him the way, and that, of course, LSD. So, you know, was the way, and that was a manifestation of Lord, you know, Jesus Christ in Kali Yuga, and it made sense. It's too difficult to practice anything else. That's all we can do. So, you know, this is a spiritual process. So, you know, the extent of cheating in Kali Yuga, you know, we can't fathom how much people are cheated and how much they're prepared to be cheated. You know. But still, you know, there are sincere people, and amongst them, or innocent people, you know, and devotees actually, as preachers, we have to recognize, you know, innocent people. Our process, therefore, is to, you know, when we come across sincere persons, we have to help them to see that if they're sincere, they will actually be following some aspect of the Vedic culture which is proper. You know, but there is a better alternative usually in bhakti yoga than what they are doing. And our method is to help them understand that, you know, it, rather than trying to sit, you know, I mean, you have to sit in a secluded place and be completely celibate. If that's not happening, you're not going to get a result. So therefore, you know, you're better off to, if you're surrounded by, you know, you're in a big city or what have you, then learn to see everything in relationship with the Supreme Lord and you know, utilize everything in a loving attitude, a service attitude. That way your mind and senses, your life breath, are being controlled and dovetailed towards the Supreme. And your mind, and you get the same result, that you lose your detachment from the, you become detached from the modes of material nature, like that. So we sort of divert people. Actually, you know, that's mentioned in the Harinam Chintamani, that, you know, a devotee, they associate with the, you know, Vikamis, the Kamis, the Gyanis, and the Sangha Yogis. And the devotees have the ability to just deflect them a little bit this way towards bhakti. You know, that they're not just to completely squash what they're doing, but just to, you know, what they're doing then moves slightly towards bhakti. Gradually what happens is, as you add an element of bhakti to what they're doing, the bhakti part becomes the most relishable and effective part of what they're doing. So if they're practicing yoga and bhakti, and they find, gee, you know, if they're sincere, they'll say, you know, the yoga part of what I'm doing is not really giving much effect. It seems to be a bit of a farce, and the more I learn about it, I don't seem to be doing it properly. But the bhakti part is really giving me some good effect, you know. So gradually that becomes something that they, it becomes more and more, gradually the bhakti part becomes the full method. That is our process, and therefore we see that, in our society, our process of yoga, which was taught by Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna himself, who spoke the Bhagavad Gita, is to become Krishna conscious and preach Krishna consciousness. And therefore, in order to serve Krishna by preaching Krishna consciousness, there is a twofold process, one of establishing temples, and the other is book distribution, which go hand in hand. It's considered the bhakti marg, you know, runs on two rails, you know, and they assist each other. Now, as far as establishing temples, you know, if you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and if you read the Nectar Devotion, you see, and if you read Srila Prabhupada's comments relating to how he was instructed, actually in the conclusion statement of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which, you know, is the essence of our whole movement, Srila Prabhupada says that this movement is established specifically to fulfill the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, to preach Krishna consciousness, and that he especially favoured book distribution. So, this has to be understood very, very, very carefully, because in many of Srila Prabhupada's statements in his books, he describes that the temples are really for the general masses. You know, the establishing temples is to attract the general people, the general populace, and for neophyte devotees. That is, you know, very effective. You can't. One of the mistakes we made at the beginning of the movement is that, you know, everyone had to be, you know, become a, you know, thrown out onto Sankirtan doing, you know, preaching. And of course we just lost so many people, because some people are too neophyte to be able to, they're not trained. You know, that it is actually preaching, it, Prabhupada mentions, is particularly for advanced devotees. You know, preaching Krishna consciousness, book distribution, it's for, you know, those who are too neophyte, they cannot do that. It's very difficult for them, and if they're put in that situation, they will fall down, they will fall away, and although they just won't even do it. Temples are very, very important to help the neophytes who are more unstable, you know, in their Krishna consciousness, and also just for attracting the general populace who have a very, very slight interest in, you know, spiritual life or religiosity or piety. And it gives them an opportunity to do something, you know, it's very attractive. But actually, the real business, as Srila Prabhupada has stated, of, you know, a mature and advanced devotee is preaching. That is their prime duty. You know, as soon as the devotees rise above the neophyte platform, their main service should be preaching. You know, that is their prime duty. And preaching is also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to Srila Prabhupada that book distribution, he said to Prabhupada, if you get money, you print books. And the reason was this, that he said, even in my presence, my disciples, you know, fighting with each other over who will get this room, who will get this facility, who will get that room in the temples. And, you know, he said, better to sell, you know, the marble of the temple and distribute books in that sense, because, you know, there is a danger that, in other words, you know, he didn't want his disciples or followers to remain neophytes just attached to hanging around the temple, just enjoying the facility, you know, all those nice prasadas, maha, you know, eating four or five different offerings a day, you know, like that. You know, better, you know, sell the temple, here's some books, go out and preach. So, you know, there's a danger there has to be some push towards helping people advance from the stage of just, you know, being attracted to, you know, the facility or the, you know, that comes with approaching the Lord. Because when you establish a temple of the Lord, Krishna will, you know, attract opulence from all over the universe. But that can be somewhat bewildering, a little bit bewildering to young devotees. And therefore, if we want them to advance, we have to get them to, you know, preach and to, you know, not remain on that neophyte platform just as an enjoyer of the temple facilities. So there's a danger there. You know. So therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, said you distribute books because, you know, and that's why Prabhupada mentions on the same point that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself never established any temples. We can also say he didn't write books, but he did speak the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he encouraged his, leading disciples to especially print and distribute books, and also to establish temples. These things, both things, must be there. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu favoured hearing and chanting over establishing temples. And so did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and so did Prabhupada. But temples are, as we said, they're extremely important, because otherwise there's no support basis for devotees in training. The temples are, you know, a centre for distributing transcendental knowledge, educational centres in transcendental knowledge, that's what the temple is, and for training devotees. So they're very, very valuable, they're not to be minimised. But the actual duty of the devotees, once receiving that transcendental knowledge and being trained, is to preach. That is the important activity. And that preaching is especially effective through book distribution, because when Prabhupada was in India, he tried since 1944, and he was producing his Back to Godhead, and he was finding it very, very hard to get proper donations and proper assistance. And then someone said to him, you know, you put so much effort, you know, because Prabhupada used to put so much effort into writing the, you know, producing the BTG and what have you. He went without food, you know, he went without, you know, everything, you know. He had, you know, like a set of clothes, you know, he frankly didn't have clothing and food, you know, but, you know, he trucked and went so much difficulty to produce it back to God. He said, you're going through so much difficulty to produce this BDG, but people read it and throw it away. You know, they'll not keep it. But for your same effort, if you print, if you write books, they're permanent. They will keep them. You know, it has a much more enduring effect on people. They'll keep them in their homes and like that. So Prabhupada took that is what my spiritual master asked me to do. And, you know, my spiritual master is prompting me through this person to take up this instruction again, you know, like that. So he decided, Shrimad Bhagavatam. And once he started writing Shrimad Bhagavatam, actually everything began to change. Because then, because he'd written the book, people arranged, or he met the Prime Minister, he met the Vice Prime Minister, people gave him big donations of thousands of rupees to print his books. You know, he was offered transport and accommodation in the West. Everything fell into place as soon as he started, you know, printing the books. And he saw this is very effective preaching. You know, these books just produce such a different result to other, you know, things that I've done. So therefore, you know, book distribution is, the acharyas see that, and Prabhupada, you know, noticed the results. And then when Prabhupada distributed books in the West, you know, Krishna consciousness took off all over the world. So therefore, you know, book distribution is extremely important. But, you know, we have to be careful there not to neglect the temple program. You know, in previous marathons, when I was in the King's Cross and the different centres, what devotees used to do, and this is some of the leading devotees, you know, Prabhupada disciples, you know, the devotees who were, you know, pretty much the leaders of that temple. When the marathon came, they put their beads down. No? And they would openly declare, you know, I'm going through it with these books, you know, my beads, I'm not picking them up until this marathon's finished. Like that. They didn't go to classes, then read, then chant. They distributed a lot of books, and eventually they all blew. But it was actually not uncommon. In most marathons, you expected to lose a couple of devotees in those days. You know, yeah, that is this. You know, oh, you probably lose a couple of devotees. They end up looping. A couple of loop during the marathon. A couple of loop after the marathon. You know. So you know that Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Delhi, he was noticing that he was talking to his devotees. And they were describing how they're doing so much activity for preaching here and there. And he noticed that, you know, they were actually neglecting the morning and evening program. He said, this is not good. This is not good, you know, that you're... Like, you know, here, of course, there's been a reduction in the morning program that, you know, it gets reduced. But devotees should be careful not to take the wrong message from that. That okay, the morning program is reduced, that means that's not very important, it's just, you know, just go out and go for the marathon, you know. Prabhupada said, you know, don't neglect this. This is his statement. They're preaching and neglecting the program. He said, if you do that, you become no better than the Kamis. In fact, therefore, you know, we become no better than those practicing his Sangha Yoga and we're saying, oh, you're doing that as a fast, you know, you're not even doing it properly, you know, you're supposed to be doing your Sangha Yoga like that. Or we say to the Christians, you're not practicing properly, you're not supposed to be eating meat. And if we're doing the same, that we neglect, you know, our hearing and chanting process, that we lose our spiritual potency, we're running around busy. In effect, our association loses its spiritual potency to the point where we can barely maintain our own spiritual practices, let alone to encourage others. And then what is the result? What is the result is that then people will receive books on the street and they'll get the books and they'll come back to the temple. Ah, I got the Bhagavad Gita. I'm so excited. I want to go to the temple and study the Bhagavad Gita. And I go to the temple and, oh, no one's really interested in hearing the Bhagavad Gita. Or, you know, I thought I'd come here and everyone's enthusiastic to, you know, attend the classes and, you know, and discussing the Bhagavad Gita. And if they come and they see, oh, there's not that enthusiasm is not there, then they will get disappointed, and you know, and they'll not be able to remain, you know, fixed up. You know, Prabhupada didn't want that. He didn't want that we, you know, go out in the street, you know, this Bhagavad Gita, that's our life and soul. But, you know, when I get back to the temple, I can't really be bothered, you know, sitting with the devotees and hearing the chanting and, you know, like that. You know, he didn't want that sort of movement. You know. He wanted that, you know, you attend the morning program, you hear from the devotees, you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, you hear the Bhagavad Gita, you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you develop that because that's your yoga, that's your becoming pratyahara, you know, samadhi, becoming free from the modes of material nature and fixing your mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then you go out and preach, and in the evening, again, you come back, you hear and a chant and associate with devotees who also have a strong taste for hearing and chanting. That's what Prabhupada wanted. Not, you know, a movement where, you know, we're presenting some false enthusiasm for something we have no taste for ourselves. So, you know, therefore Prabhupada said, you know, if you do this, you become just the same as the karmis. You know, the people we criticize for being, you know, doing things foolishly and falsely, you become the same because that's what you're doing. You know, you lose your spiritual potency. So, therefore, you know, it is the temple, you know, although book distribution, you know, we should have a proper enthusiasm for book distribution as the, you know, and preaching, and especially books are the basis of that preaching, that should be there, but not, you know, a fanatical approach that we neglect the importance of our temple program, you know, which is, you know, the very source of our inspiration and strength and protection against Maya to help us to preach. And those devotees, you know, this is my personal experience, those devotees who remain fixed in their morning, you know, association with devotees in hearing and chanting in kirtan and in the evening, every day, they will preach for all their life. They'll just, and they may go out in the marathon, and you see their names may be at the bottom of the list, and someone else is at the top of the list. But after 2 years, the one at the top of the list is not even distributing, and the one at the bottom is still at the bottom, but they're still distributing. And 20 years later, they're still at the bottom of the list, but they're still distributing. You're better off to be that person at the bottom of the list that's going to be here in 30 years distributing Krishna consciousness than you at the top of the list and 6 months from now we may not see you. And that was Prabhupada's fear. So, you know, therefore we see here that Prabhupada is quite happy to give, you know, full credit to Dhritarashtra because he was actually following something sincerely. And, you know, we can learn from that. You know, apply that same thing in our Krishna consciousness, and because it is, you know, the ultimate process, if we apply ourselves sincerely and properly to Krishna consciousness, we will attain so much more than, you know, in a very rapid way. We can go back to Godhead, we can go back to Goloka Vrindavan. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
As you said very clearly, this movement is business as we start with this movement and mainly for distribution of books. So we all have to concentrate on that aspect. Preaching. So you say basically it's called a preaching institution.
That's right.
Now we find one or two bad apples in a barrel, I think they have to be taken out because they bring a very bad name to the whole school.
You can take them out.
And I'm also, I understand also that one couple, because I want to correct that, is coming almost every day in the evening. all these things makes a very bad impression on the guest and also on the other devotees. So is there any way of...
Yeah, that's what Prabhupada wanted. You know, Prabhupada wanted that, you know, if we go out and do a book distribution marathon, what's going to happen is that you're going to get a lot of people come to the temple. And when they come, if they're disappointed with the character and behaviour of the devotees, they'll again go away. You know? And therefore the book distribution marathon, you know, there is no loss. There is no loss to the book distributor. And there's no loss to the person who's received the book. They have all made advancement. But actually, if you want the movement to be effective, then, you know, if we distribute the books, you expect that people will come to the temple and they will want to study the books. Therefore, we have to have, you know, proper respect for the programs, the Srimad Bhagavatam class, Evening Gita, the Bhakti Vaibhava, the Bhakti Shastri. Devotees have to respect those programs, you know, the teachers and the students, and the actual process that's going on there. And any of the programs which are cultivating aspects of the philosophy and teachings, you know, we have different seminars and retreats, all of those programs which are actually cultivating behavior and attitudes which are consistent with our philosophy in the books, they all have to be properly respected and given due importance and not neglected or not put second to anything else. I see strange things happen sometimes.
Thank you.
But, you know, so we may, you know, we all see people doing strange things, but as long as actually the proper cultivation through the books does not go on in the temple, devotees would do all sorts of strange things. When they're serving prasadam, when they're interacting with each other, when they're preaching, when they're worshipping the deities. The thing that corrects everything is a proper understanding of Prabhupada's philosophy from his books. That is the basis of everything, both in the temple and out. So we want people to come, and when they come, they say, these people are practicing what I loved in the book. But if they come and they say, this is in the book, but what are they doing? Then that's not good. Alright, I think we better leave it there. Thank you very much. Oh, did you, someone have a question? Yes, sir. Trickery that's acceptable. You know, when you're distributing books, and people used to bring their complaints to Prabhupada, oh, they're doing this and doing that. Prabhupada would first have a laugh and then he would usually tell a story. But, you know, he didn't heavily chastise people, but, you know, he would give this example that, you know, sometimes a parent sees that a child has like a $100 note. And they don't even know the value of it. So like the non-devotees, they have so much opulence, which is Krishna's, it's not even there. So the child has a $100 note, which they've got from their parents, and they're just... So the parent had to get it off them. So what they do is they say, look, I have this lozenge, which is worth more than that $100. You know, know, so you give me that and I'll give you this and that. So they cheat them. So that's acceptable because, you know, it's acceptable. So, you know, in book distribution, if you don't, you know, to some degree or another, you know, if they're not going to take a book, but you know that if they somehow take it and read it and you haven't been too much of a cheat, too much of a fraud, too radical in your approach, they'll say, oh, look, he said that he or she tricked me a little bit, but I'm so glad about that book. That's okay. But if we've approached them, what you're saying, which is correct, if we've approached them and we've cheated them in such a lying way that they think, I'm not going to read this, I got so ripped off by that, Harry, you know. I used to see, I can't even say, but some of my godbrothers, you know, tell you a few stories, but I won't. I'll tell you in half the class. But, you know, so it's there because, you know, our point is we don't want, if that person takes a book, you may have just saved that person from becoming a dog. You know, and but we have to do it in such a way that they sort of enjoy the process. Okay, I'm a little bit tricked, but I'm so glad. So they're not too angry. If you really annoy them and they're going to throw the book, don't do that.
No.
But if you somehow they take the book by a little trickery and they read it and come to the temple, then that's okay. So you know, you've got to judge here by the results of it. Mm. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.